This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Well, thanks, Nelson, for introducing. I'm Kyle Stoltzfus. Like I said, I work at Faith Builders and get to work with some people there who do have a profound sense of why they do what they do, but we'll get into that. I start with some introductory comments here about just the internet and how it's affected us. In 1995, Pew Research, which is a research company, they do a lot of polling, conducted a survey to see what it was the internet's doing to American culture. They found out that 42% of Americans in 1995 had not heard of the internet. They didn't know what it was. There's an additional 21% of Americans who had some idea of what the internet was, but they were hazy on the concept, as in they knew it had something to do with computers and telephone lines. There's 14% of Americans who actually used the internet, and they used the internet at the best speed they could get at 33.6 kilobits per second. Do you remember those days? Okay. Now, let's take that figure and follow it toward the present day. So, you start off at 14% using the internet. Now, in 2012, same research company, we're up to 81% of Americans actually using the internet, and the speeds that are unbelievable compared to what 33.6 afforded you. This has had a lot of implications, of course. If you're on the internet, you're using it, you're using the kinds of channels that it provides, you're using it for your social life. It changes a lot about the dynamics socially, about how people use information. In very grounded terms, this now means that 65% of U.S. adults sleep with the internet accessible right beside their bed. 65%, a third of those people check social media updates before they even roll out of bed in the morning. What a way to start your day. That's profound. That's significant in influencing where our culture is going. You can imagine then that the shifts that this has made has really dramatically shifted how people consume and look for information as well. Now let's zoom all the way into nonprofits. The internet has had a really significant influence in how people seek out information about the nonprofits they care about and how they stay in touch with them as well. Now I drive this straight to a question to you all. This is a true or false question. True or false? The internet has changed everything about nonprofit communications. Go ahead and circle one, commit to this, if you got your hand out there. True or false? And now a raise of hands. How many of you say true? The internet has changed everything about nonprofit communications. There's some hands up. Now who comes down on false? Hands up here. We're kind of divided, a little bit more of you on false. Okay, I agree with you saying false, and here's why. It was a trick question. That's a red herring. I come down on saying false because the internet has provided us with an incredible number of channels for communication, different ways that we can communicate with people. However, when you're talking about communications in a discipline, the channels, however significant they are only ways of getting your content out to your intended audience. The content is independent of that channel, okay? So what distinguishes good and effective communications is not the layout. It's not the right colors, the fancy fonts, or the really sharp layout that you get. As complementary as those things are, that's not the significant thing. Or the channel, whether you're using social media yet, are you all on Facebook yet? That's not the significant question here. That's just another channel. These only convey the message. These get the content across. This can be something that it's used across the many different kinds of organizations. So whether you're on Facebook or not isn't as significant as what content do you use? And is that content uniquely yours? Okay? So the question then is, do you have content that's significant, that belongs to your organization, and that you can then take and propagate across these various channels. So you want to communicate with the audience. And if you're here, you probably have some message to give them. You have some goal in mind, and you want to communicate that goal to your audience, and you want some kind of response from them, probably. You want them to understand why it is you do the things that you do. You want to draw them to support your cause in some way. And I want to talk about, in that rule of drawing and support, why-centered communication. But before I get to why-centered communication, I'm going to give something to contrast that with, something that we can push against and say, this is what why-centered communication is not like. I talk about that in terms of carrots and sticks. So let's talk about some carrots and sticks before we can actually get to where we're going. Sticks are what you use when you want to goad your audience into cooperating with you. A goad, it's a sharp, pointy stick that you drive into the side of an animal and you force it to comply with you. If it doesn't comply, you push it in harder, it becomes more painful, and eventually you're going to get some kind of cooperation, but it's induced. So sticks are things like fear. Fear is a very powerful motivator. You could see an example of this in the 1980s anti-drug campaign, in which the man holds up a pristine white egg and said, "This is your brain." Below him, on his right-hand side, is a frying pan. The oil is splatteringly hot. He cracks the egg, puts it into the frying pan. The egg immediately erupts in the pan, spews oil. "This is your brain on drugs." It's a powerful motivator. That's fear. It'll get a hold of people. You'll influence their behavior. A second stick, peer pressure. You say, if our program is good enough for this group of people or for that individual, it's good enough for you. Another way to induce peer pressure would be to find somebody who's influential, who has a voice and some authority, and get them to endorse your program. Or better yet, hire them and help them to come on board. Suddenly you've got a very significant influencer in people's behavior to say, "Oh wow, if that person's there, why shouldn't I be there too?" You're communicating, if it's good enough for these folks, it's good enough for you as well. That's peer pressure. Carrots, then. If those are the sticks, this is what carrots are like. You dangle carrots in front of your audience as some way of drawing them toward your program. You give them some picture of a short-term benefit that's going to advantage them somehow, some short-term payoff, or maybe an unrealistic picture of who they could become by participating in your program. You do this with things like promotions. You buy now and get 30% back. That's a carrot. It induces gives a picture of a short-term benefit for them. Buy price. If you lower your price, you're going to inevitably attract more people to whatever product or program that you're trying to get people to work with you on. Now, price isn't only cost. This isn't only cash I'm talking about. You can also get people to cooperate with you or work with you by lowering immaterial sorts of costs as well. If people are complaining that your program requires too much diligence, too much hard work, too much commitment of time or energy, one way of getting them to work with you is by lowering the cost of that, saying, "This is too hard, we'll make it easier for you." And you'll get a response. More people will probably join onto the cause. That's a carrot. Aspiration is a more general category of carrots. You say, if fear is something that pushes people or goads people, drives them, induces them into some sort of behavior, aspiration draws them towards something. You set in front of them a tantalizing picture of who they could become, who they could be like if they participated in your program and worked with you. And that draws them. It attracts them to the program itself. The last carrot, and I realize I'm moving quickly through these, this isn't the main point, just laying some contrast, is novelty. If you don't have anything else to say, just talk about the newness of the program. What distinguishes it? What makes it novel? What makes your offering unique if you'd be comparing it to other similar programs? This is novelty. It's how different, how unique, or just how new it is. If you don't have anything else to say about it that distinguishes, just say, hey, it's new. And there is some drawing power there. People are drawn toward new things. It's a powerful marketing tool. Just say it's new. It doesn't have to be better. People will probably be up for it. Now, a question for you then. Have you seen these tools, carrots and sticks, used? Think especially in the for-profit world. And the next question after that is, if you've seen them used, because you probably have, why do you think they're used? You've got an answer there. And the answer, I think, is fairly simple. It's because it works. People use carrots and sticks. They use fear. They use aspirations. They use the novelty of their product to draw people in because it does. It does. It draws them in. They become motivated to purchase a product, to make a transaction, to somehow become part. And this works in the nonprofit sector as well. Okay? You see it more blatantly in the for-profits, but in nonprofits too. So you get results, you get donations, you get volunteers, you get the attention that you want by drawing on carrots and sticks. But there's a price you pay for the support you gain. There's a price you pay for that kind of support. Aside from the ethical problems that tend to just run rampant in all of these, and you might have felt that as I'm describing, like, I'm not sure if I feel comfortable with where this is going. And that's a good response because there's some ethical problems here sometimes. They work by inducing behavior on people. And this is where the significant weakness of carrots and sticks are. They induce behavior by giving a certain feeling, something like dread, pity, or maybe sympathy. And that response that you get from your audience is a certain kind of behavior. They respond with support of some kind, maybe a donation, some time, or maybe they even give you a little bit of their labor. You'll generate a transaction, which is good, but what happens when you need to ask again? You've got to stimulate that cycle all over again. And it's not unlikely that in that asking process, you've jaded them a little bit. You've calloused a little bit. So the response, to get the same kind of response, you've got to stimulate more forcefully. Okay? If you've induced fear and you've gotten a response, the next time you ask, you've got to induce more fear to get the same kind of response. So there's a downward kind of cycle that comes with carrots and sticks, whether it's on the carrot side or the stick side, that tends to depreciate with time. What these don't generate is loyalty. Loyalty is that internally motivated response which commits to whatever goals, whatever programs it is that you're communicating about. So if you're looking for short-term gains without a view toward the long-term consequences of whatever it is that you're promoting or generating response for, keep carrots and sticks in your back pocket, maybe. But we're talking about the long-term vision of your communications. So let's talk about why. From here, I just take, we can move into two components here. The first, I just want to help you identify why. And then we'll set that in contrast with what. I'll get there in just a moment. And then after we've identified what it is that why is, what it is that I'm talking about, when I say start with why, I'll apply that. And we'll do a little bit of work along the way so that you can actually work among yourselves here and identify some of the core values or the why values of why it is what you do. So I want you to be able to identify the core reasons for what you do, so your communications can result not only in transactions, but in internally motivated loyalty to programs. I think you'll find that the model that I'm describing here, the why focus, can be used not just in communications, but also in leadership, in discipleship, in evangelism. So this model can go out in many different directions. We're just going to focus it in today and talk specifically about communications. But bear in mind, this could connect with some other questions you're facing, or maybe even just have some value elsewhere than just communications. So let's highlight two distinct categories of content here. The first category of content is where I'm driving. This is why content, or why questions. Why questions are questions of mission. This is the core reason for what you're doing. It's your purpose. When I'm looking for why, I ask questions like, what is the underlying belief, cause, or purpose of whatever behavior is happening here? I'll ask a question to a person saying, why do you do this program? Why do you sponsor this event? What's behind it for you? What's motivating that? Or, why do you get out of bed to do this? Why should anyone care about this? That provokes a quick response. Why should anyone care about this? You'll quickly start getting some conversation, maybe a little bit of defensiveness there. Those are why questions. Coming out of why, then sourced in why, and springing out of it is what? This is the second category. What tends to focus more on description? You ask things like, what products or events are you producing? You could ask, how many pages long is the book? Who wrote it? How long is the program? 2 months? 3 years? How much does it cost? Questions of finances will come and fall into the what category. That's description. That's what. Now, a lot of organizations focus on what as they try to communicate what it is that they're doing. And there's a good reason for that. You focus on what, you're focusing on the most concrete thing, the results of what it is that you're doing. You move from the abstract thing, which is why, and you go toward the concrete things, and it makes sense to focus there. What we do is often within easiest reach for us. Why we do it is often stored away in the hearts of the founders, the people who initially motivated whatever events, whatever settings, whatever products are coming out. It's usually in their heart. Sometimes it stays there, depending on the quality of leadership. So what we do springs from why we do it. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, and the hands act, and the events come out of that. So there's a reversal here. But exclusively focusing on what, we're depriving ourselves of a really significant part of communication. I'm suggesting there's some change, some reversal that should happen there. So merely getting people to participate in programs using carrots and sticks to motivate them into the program, into the event, to buy the book, to get within, to disciple, however it is a short-term solution that eventually leads to a long-term disaster. It's not sustainable. You want to motivate people to take up your calls, not just to repeat certain behaviors, or you run dry after a while. Also, communication needs to be focused on the needs of the audience, not just the needs of the communicator. This is where what-focused communication also tends to fall short. Because just by its very nature, if you're describing programs, if you're describing events, if you're describing how things work within your organization, you become fairly inward-focused, and you're not really paying as much attention to the audience that you're talking to. So you're describing, if you're focused on what, you're describing the internal layout of your organization. You focus on the goals that you have, like fundraising, increasing participation rates, or just reporting on activities. Here, let us help you understand our programs or our products. We have these three programs of study. Here's our board of directors. Here's our profit and loss sheet. You know, as important as those things are, I don't want to undermine that those are important things for your audience to trust you, to have believability. Why focused communication pulls away from the internal needs of your organization and attempts to understand the audience. Call it servant speaking or servant communicating. I've heard that described in different ways. But the bottom line is, it's not about you. It's not about the internal needs that you have or the events that you're pulling off, as worthwhile as those things are. You focus on the audience. So I'm suggesting that our communication always be rooted in why, in those why questions, not just what. Describing what you do is important, but it's only because of why you do it that those questions are important. I'll illustrate this way. It was 1947, and William Townsend, the founder of Wycliffe Bible Translators, boarded a small plane. He was heading from Peru to Mexico. The pilot was young, he was generous, and he was inexperienced. And there was a crash. All aboard the plane were seriously injured. Nobody was killed, but Townsend was among of those who was injured the most severely in this accident. And at the moment of that crash, even as they were trying to extricate him from the wreckage of the airplane, he was talking about the need of some kind of partner organization that would do in a skilled way, well, would avoid some of the same accidents in the future. That is the moment when the why of JARS was born. Okay? So in the wreckage of that aircraft, there was a vision formed. The why of JARS was formed. Now, Townsend recognized the need of safe and effective transportation and the role that that could play in Bible translation. For translators to be effective, they've got to be alive. And to get them there, you need things like sturdy aircraft and very capable pilots. So today, the what of JARS includes 35 aircraft, 3 helicopters, and 64 pilots, 41 mechanics in Africa, South America, and the Asian Pacific. But the why has been retained as well. If you go to their website, this is their homepage, but notice what's up here. It's very small, sorry, but there's why and what. The why has been retained here, and they identify why it is they do what they do. They talk about the Bible. This is foundational to why JARS even exists. So the Bible matters. People understand and relate to God through the Bible. Language matters. Language shapes how you see the world. You're tied to your culture, history, and identity through language. Communities matter. Bible translation is part of a bigger package. Entire communities change for the better. That's why they exist. What, then? On the next page, you say, we're about what works, okay? This is what they do. This is practical, day-to-day support that JARS offers. A sturdy, capable aircraft with a well-trained pilot. This is something they provide. New software that allows some of the menial tasks of translation to be automated. Or managed backups that happen remotely from their center down there that avoid entire years of translation work from being lost with a canoe tipping into the river and note cards floating downstream, or maybe a laptop hard drive failing. These are the sorts of services that JARS provides to Wycliffe. Those are the what's. But there's also been a retention of why they do that. And if you visit the JARS campus today, you'll find a thriving campus of creativity, people finding novelty, of applying themselves in a lot of different disciplines and working very diligently, very hard to respond to the needs of Wycliffe. That's because they still have a strong sense of identity in why. Now, if anybody could get consumed in what they do, I think it'd be JARS. But they've retained why, and because of that, they still have an identity. They can still communicate effectively. So effective, sustaining communication communicates why. And I've given you a few illustrations of that. We've defined it. Now you get a chance to do it to each other. We're going to do a peer interview here. Take just a number of minutes. It won't be very long. And I'll get us all on track by just a series of questions here that I'll provide for you that you'll be asking each other, okay? So first, how many of you are involved in organized ministry of some kind? I see a raise of hands here. Keep those hands up for a minute. It's a good majority. Great, okay. Now, how many of you are not involved in some kind of organized ministry? Far fewer, okay. Do you still have some sort of cause that you care about? You're probably here at Reach if you have something you care about, I'd imagine. So don't feel left out. If you're not tied to an organized ministry of some kind, you're still part of this exercise. What I want you to do is find mixed groups of people who are involved in organized or just unorganized ministry. For you ministries, focus on the programs and events that you maintain. For you individuals who aren't tied to some kind of ministry explicitly, focus on ministry activities you engage in. You've got a heart for giving, probably. So focus on one way you give in ministry. Now, go ahead, find those groups. Just keep them small. No more than three people. All right, go ahead and mix it up. And I'll give you those questions. All right, go ahead and settle in. I'll give you the questions that you can use to get toward why. You're going to be asking each other some questions. So you can focus on just one individual for a little while. We may have time for you to kind of reciprocate and then move on to the next person, but there probably won't be time for all of you, okay? This is an exercise. So ask each other questions. Questions like, what difference does that program make for you involved in nonprofit ministry? You have programs and events. So what difference does that program make? Ask a question like, why do you care about that? Direct it toward the individual. Why do you care about that program, that event, that cause that you're doing? Or ask, who benefits from that program? How do they benefit from it? Those are why-focused questions. Okay? You will have, 4 to 5 minutes. I'll see how things progress. Find somebody to interview and go. I'd love to hear from a few of you. Just think about it. Think of all the buzz that happened here instantly. There's a few of you who care a little bit about what you do, okay? That's plain. These are why issues. If you're caring about it, if you're responding with some kind of emotional response, you're getting toward why content here. So I want to sample. Just maybe a couple of you talk about what it is you've got. And for you who are doing the interviewing, I want to hear a response from you. Okay, just one or two of you. You did an interview, yes? So you're getting a central issue there is caring about the Bible, learning about it, but then there's things that connect very naturally with that. Okay, good. There's several levels there even. One other person here. Okay, so what is the why behind that? That's what. If they're building a website, that's a what? That's pushing for it. Good. Okay.
And without cost.
Mm-hmm. That's significant. Okay, so you're feeling the struggle here, though, too. This is a lot of work. You can just repeat behaviors without necessarily getting a hold of the why. You can put programs in place without always making the connection here. But it's a necessary connection. That work needs to be done. We'll move on. And hopefully we can revisit that if we have time. So that's the general abstraction here of communicator, understanding what why is. And we're just moving quickly with that. But the next part where I'm transitioning toward here is actually in communicating why. So we're going to get a little bit more practical here. The best way I can do that is by offering a case study. And this is one that I was involved in. I work at Faith Builders, so I know a little bit here about the experience, because this is part of how I was exposed to why questions. So the previous generation of brochures that we had were tired out. Every promotion, every brochure, every website you have, it has a life cycle to it. Content wears out after a while. And this brochure set, the content that was in it was worn out. It was tired. It was time to move something else into it. These were dead brochures, and we needed to make new ones. We wanted to talk about our three tracks of study: Christian ministries, teacher apprenticing, and general studies, to help people understand those three tracks of studies and hopefully have some people apply. Now, there's three temptations that immediately rise up at the start of a project like that. You could get out the carrots and sticks and say, we are losing a generation of students to secular influence. Okay, that provokes a response. There's some fear. 25% tuition discount for the first five students who apply to our two-year tracks of study. Or $500 cash back to all who attend our five-week summer term. That just sounds ridiculous. So another alternative there, instead of carrots and sticks, I could get so caught up in the channel that I neglect the content that I'm actually communicating. Rush right in to choose the right colors, to find the right fonts, or maybe get the right pictures. But there's a problem. There's nothing for me to focus on as a designer if I'd rush right in there, and I would get mired down in the details. There'd be nothing for me to focus on, nothing to orbit around. And if the designer's confused, your audience is sure to be confused too. Or I could parrot out the internal language that we use in our offices. Things like the what language that we use. So we need this language to care about and organize why we do what we do, but to just repeat that wouldn't be effective. So I could say teacher apprenticing is a two-year college-level program with unique emphasis on practicum. We offer cognates in primary education, secondary education, and administration. You want to come? Okay. You see the problem there. That's what language. It works in our offices, but to communicate why doesn't work quite as well. So these could work in the short-term picture, in a pinch. If resources were limited, that could work, but there's a long-term cost. So we've got to consider the short-term benefit of that in light of the long-term cost. So bite the bullet and make the investment here. If you think good content is expensive, you should try bad content. That's really expensive. So we started with a proposal outlining four options. The most radical of these options were very radical statements of why, even to the exclusion of saying anything about events or programs. We were just focusing on why. Made statements like focus, resist apathy, or gain momentum in your life. Find direction in personal life. Or we went to the other extreme and had more comfortable statements of what, more program-focused statements. We have 3 2-year tracks of study at Faith Builders. We could focus there. It seemed that the most radical statements of why would appeal to young people and frighten the adults. And you could invert that as well. The what focused ones would appeal more to the adults and bore the younger people. So we decided to focus on why, but not on the radical sense of why. We would anchor these brochure sets in why, and from there discuss what. This led to interviews. Each of the three tracks of study is led by one of our staff. So this is a very non-technical process. You walk into their office and say, Gerald, I want to talk to you about teacher apprenticing. Do you have 15 minutes to talk about this? You would start to write down what he wrote as you'd ask him questions, just like the sorts of questions that you all asked each other. You would ask him, so Garrett, why do you care about teacher apprenticing? and the pen was off like lightning. You're going. And you're 45 minutes later into this, and he's still going, even though he's missing another meeting. Okay, that's the kind of response you tend to get from administrators who really care about what it is they're doing. They had stories. They had reasons. They had scripture. They had hopes connected to what it is that they were doing. This was the why sort of content that you were looking for. So you set it down on paper, and then after you set it down on your paper, you set the notepad down for real and ruminate on it for a while. Give it a couple of weeks. This takes time. You've got to have the time. You've got to have the planning and the resources to do it. But set it down, revisit it every once in a while, and ask yourself, what is this person saying? What is the bottom core reason for what they do? I did this for the three different tracks of study that I mentioned, teacher apprenticing, Christian ministries, and general studies. And then sat on it for a while, revisited, and then eventually came up with three brochures. One of these for each of our tracks of study. It's not totally clear here. You can stop by or stand if you want to. Just pick up a set of them. This is an illustration of what I mean by why centered communication and what coming out of that. So we started with why by focusing on the real core reason of what it was that we were doing there. So for teacher apprenticing, we said a statement like, teachers make a difference. This is why we care about teacher apprenticing, and what we do is apprentice teachers. Developing a Christian mind was for general studies. Or preparation enables service for Christian ministries. That was the why response. The brochures begin by introducing the reader to why. We discovered that answering that question first allowed us to carry more freight in the brochures. We could do more than just talk about two-year programs of study suddenly. We could also explain why it was we did other events, other programs. So you centered it on why, and suddenly we had more to work with there. You could put more into this brochure, and it made sense. It still worked well. It had explaining power that went beyond what we bargained for. So we could get more mileage out of these brochures than we expected as well. So that same content, then you could take it and you could transmit it across many different channels. Suddenly you had a set of brochures, yes, but this same content was good to get into our website, to get into our newsletter, to get all across the different platforms that we have. It started with that why content. So it's flexible. I'll take just a brief time now. We won't have too much time to actually do the exercise. Nelson, where am I at here? 3 minutes, okay. We'll just take 2 minutes here. I know this is very rapid, but just think through the process here. You have these peer interviews, the content that you have there. What I want you to do now is to make just a couple of connections. You all brainstorming, time to do this. Make connections to your programs and events and to some core topics as well. Core topics are themes that come out of the why, content that you can focus on. So if your ministry is tabby cat rescuers, you could talk about where to adopt a tabby or what to do if you find a lost tabby, the history of tabbies or why tabbies are special. Those are core themes, okay? They come out of why. You've got just 2 minutes now to think about core topics or to think about how why relates to what. And then I'll conclude it, okay? I'm seeing some confusion here. Is there a question? You can do this as individuals, yes. Just as individuals. No, just take the why question, relate it to a topic, relate it to an event, write it down if you can. I've got to cut you short. That's not nearly enough time, and I know it. However, if you would take this, expand it, identify the core reasons, the why questions, relate that to the programs, the events, the themes and the topics that you care about, set that on a calendar, and then take it and diversify it into the various channels you have accessible to you. Do that hard work, and you have a why-focused communication strategy. Wasn't that easy, right? No, I realize there's lots of work that has to go into this, but that is just a model. And you've gone through that little model to construct a why-focused communication strategy. You can take that with you, of course. Now, we have so many marketing, so many communications channels available to us today, and the digital explosion has just made them even more diverse, more different from each other, and more of them available. Websites, newsletters, brochures, applications, email marketing. It's easy to get distracted by the channels. It's easy to give energy into just diversifying into all of these channels. But best start with the rudiments. Best start with content, and best start with why. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.